This week on Myths and Legends, it's the first story of leprechauns from Irish folklore. We'll see that the best way to get out of owing someone is to sneak up and drag your creditor into a lake, and that when leprechauns build safeguards into their shoes, you should follow those, or else you might scream so much that the top of your mouth stretches to the back of your neck. The creature this time is a Canadian dragon who does not want to move. This is Myths and Legends, episode 360, Lucky. This is a podcast where we tell stories from mythology and folklore. Some are incredibly popular stories you might think you know, but with surprising origins. Others are stories that might be new to you, but are definitely worth a listen. Today, we're in Irish folklore, in Northern Ireland, with the story of Fergus MacLeity and the leprechauns. Set around the time of the Toyne, from episodes 22a through c, this Ireland is one of brutal kings who will not take dishonor lightly, or apparently take meetings to know what's going on in their kingdoms. Oh my gosh, why do we have to have these meetings? High King Lugaid asked his advisor. They were so boring. It's because when we don't, the advisor snapped his fingers to get the king's attention, when we don't, you make careless mistakes. Like what? I'm king. I can't make a mistake. The High King laughed. Like, there are two kings of Ulster right now. The advisor immediately shut the king down. The king, coughing up his wine, said, what? That was a massive mistake. You gave them both your blessing. The advisor raised his hands. Why would I do that? You know what? That's on you. I should have been informed that there were these two people vying for the same throne. Like, in a time where you all get together and tell me these things on maybe a regular occasion. Oh, I'm seeing what you're saying now. Got it. Meetings are important. The High King sat back. Okay. Problem-solving time. He clapped his hands. Who are the kings? Yeah, Fergus and Conall, the advisor winced. Oh, those guys hate each other. I'll be real, this is not my finest moment. Okay, what's the current sitch? It's what people call situate. No, it's not. They don't? Okay, they don't. That's uncool. It's outlawed now. The advisor might have been remembering why he saw these meetings as tedious too, and told the High King that, currently, Fergus ruled the south and Conall ruled the north. Okay, well, Fergus. The High King grinned and got back to his wine. You're just gonna say Fergus? No trial by combat or summit or something? Why Fergus? The advisor looked through his notes. Fergus pays his taxes. On time. And he throws in a little extra taxes just for me. The High King grinned. The advisor closed his notebook. Okay, that's gonna read as a bribe. It's not a bribe. It's taxes. The advisor said, and taxes and a bribe. Additional taxes, taxes earmarked for my fund money by him. In like a smoke-filled room, the advisor exhaled. That's a trick question because rooms are all smoke-filled in this time. We light bonfires inside to heat our houses. QED. Fergus is the king of Ulster. Make it happen. The king rose. The meeting was over. A few months later, a new meeting was beginning. Former King Conall, so nice to see you. Finally come to pay your back taxes? Can't help you now. Not that that would have ever helped anybody because that would be bribery, which was not the situation with Fergus. He was just a great guy and Conall's stride was intentional. His boots clicked past the courtiers and petty kings. Excited to be in the presence of your king, I see. The High King laughed. Happened a lot. Not as much as it should. He scowled at the other courtiers, who could learn from Conall's example and enthusiasm. He even brought a spear with him, no doubt to symbolically pledge his armies and men to the High King. Conall was standing over him now. The High King pointed out that people usually bowed from down there, but hey, if he wanted to mix things up and show even more loyalty, no harm, no foul, and, well, in both harm and foul, the king looked down to see a length of Conall's spear handle protruding from his chest. He felt the warm blood trickle down his belly. What? He slumped over and fell off his throne. Connell caught the crown as he fell, put it on, and took a seat. Bill, Mailer, message from the High King, Muna, Fergus's right-hand man and charioteer, said, tearing open the envelope.
Regret to inform you... Oof,
the warrior trailed off. Well, Fergus asked, when he didn't continue reading, you're not the King of Ulster anymore. The warrior winced. Fergus rose, his cloak unfurling behind him. What was that supposed to mean? The High King Lugaid said he was the King of Ulster. Yeah, there's been, something of a change in management in the office of the High King. Muna, Fergus's charioteer and his closest confidant, said. Fergus snatched the letter. This was unconscionable. He would not rest until he took back his home and his throne. 3 months later, it was time to rest. He had done it. He had taken back his home and his throne. Muna, I'll be honest, I thought that would be way harder. Fergus interlaced his fingers behind his head and reclined on the shore of the lake. Muna said, a lot of people died. There was a big war, big pitched battle. Fergus won mainly because he was more powerful and a craftier strategic thinker, but also because no petty king wanted to support the precedent of stabbing kings when things didn't go your way. So they all allied with Fergus. We're not even in debt from the war. Fergus laughed. We got so many kumuls in response for being unfairly ousted. We got like 21 kumuls. A kumul is a unit of value, and it means different things in different contexts. Apparently, the original meaning was enslaved women, which, yes, there's a lot to unpack there. He received 7 enslaved women, 7 kumuls of land, where a kumul is 21 Irish acres or 34 English and US acres, and 1 kumul equaled 3 cows. So, all in all, Fergus received 7 enslaved women, 147 Irish acres, and 21 cows for his trouble. So now, it was maxin' and relaxin'. You think Connell and Ross and all their evil advisors have started to eat each other yet? Fergus asked Muna. Muna grimaced. He didn't like to think about that. Well, I do, Fergus said. He loved the thought of his enemies, set adrift in the sea without food, water, or cover, left to die by the hands of their friends or unforgiving, unrelenting nature. Whose idea was it to set the offenders adrift instead of just executing them?
Yours, sire? Muna noted. That's right, it was. Fergus grinned.
All right, it was nap time. Fergus blinked a few times and closed his eyes. This had been a good day. Before Fergus even opened his eyes, he heard Muna snoring beside him. And then he felt the tugging on both of his ankles. Then, the whispers? Man, he is a heavy one. Are all the humans this heavy? No, he's the king. They get all the food and taxes and stuff. While everyone else suffers, it's a whole thing, the other voice said. The first voice said he knew what a king was. They have kings too. Don't get all political here. Then they both paused. Why wasn't the other one helping? He wasn't helping because, well, he was choking. Fergus opened his eyes and made his move on the one by his arm, grabbing him by the throat. He looked at the diminutive creatures. Humanoid, dressed in fine clothes. He grimaced. What? Wait a second, were these? Leprechauns. One dropped his left boot and ran to the other. Leprechauns, please let him go. Do you surrender? Fergus demanded. The one he had by the throat touched his cheek and his chest. So did the ones at his feet. He dropped the one he held, and the man gasped in the rocks. The story assures us that, afterward, everyone in Ireland did this gesture when they wanted to surrender to someone's honor. I got one of the fairy creatures, huh? Fergus smirked. Leprechauns. Specifically leprechauns, the leprechaun said. I've never heard of leprechauns. Fergus studied the creatures. Well, remember the name.
The leprechauns smiled at one another. Fergus laughed, then he looked more closely at the creatures. Hey, no, he did know these guys. These were the wee folk of Phelan. The leprechauns looked to one another. No, no, they were leprechauns. Hey, no, you guys still owe me. They messed up all sorts of stuff in Ulster. The leprechauns looked to each other and then tried to make a run for it. The jig was up. Fergus caught one by its cape. No, no, no. They knew what he was talking about. But to refresh their memories, he would cut away to an extensive embedded backstory, featuring a whole new cast of characters. Okay, it's only a mostly new cast of characters. Fergus is still there. But that embedded narrative will be right after this.
I know plenty of people who like to spend money, but no one who likes to waste it.
And one place we were definitely wasting money every 30 days was all the streaming services we had.
We were pushing close to $100, doing a lot of searching and not much watching.
That, of course, was before we started using ExpressVPN. Since then, we've cut back and are saving so much every month.
See, all these streaming services like Netflix actually have thousands more shows than we thought. We just didn't see them in the main suggestions because we were only seeing shows depending on our country.
Using the ExpressVPN app, however, I can change my online location because ExpressVPN has over 90 countries to choose from. I'm learning French, so I picked France one day. That's how we discovered Lupin. I just never knew about it because it never showed up on any of my suggested shows. With a single tap, I changed my country to France, refreshed the page, et voilà.
We've cut down on the number of streaming services we need just by adding ExpressVPN. And at less than $7 a month, ExpressVPN pays for itself and so much more.
It's a no-brainer. So if you want to get way more shows and save money while you're at it, go to expressvpn.com/legends. Don't forget to use my link so you can get 3 extra months free. That's expressvpn.com/legends. expressvpn.com/legends to learn more.
Life is full of have-tos, but have-tos seen as get-tos are so much better.
Take grocery shopping, for example. I do not love doing that, but shopping from the couch? Yes, please. That's the beauty of Thrive Market.
Thrive Market has become our no-junk food, healthy grocery store that even our kid likes.
Thrive Market ships everything to our doorstep. Then on top of that, Thrive Market makes finding quality groceries easy. As in, they restrict hundreds of ingredients right off the bat, and they only carry brands with the highest quality inclusions and sourcing methods. It means I can use their filters to search deals, pantry items, vegan and low-sugar alternatives, knowing that what I find is good stuff.
In fact, those are the search filters we've been using lately. Plus, we have staples we pick each and every time now, like Califia Farms Cold Brew Coffee. You love that?
Oh, yeah.
And Soli Organic Dried Pineapple. A dried pineapple may look a little weird, but it's one of my favorite snacks now. It's got really good vitamins.
As Thrive Market members, we saved $51.16 this last order. And we get to try Lotus Foods rice ramen noodles. I'm excited to see if that works better for all of our stomachs.
Save time and money and shop Thrive Market today. Go to thrivemarket.com/legends for 30% off your first order, plus a free $60 gift. That's thrivemarket.com/legends. thrivemarket.com/legends.
Isert held out his hands when the human wearing the crown arrived at the front gate. Fergus, King of Ulster! Fergus stood at the open door, the torches bathing the gatehouse behind him in warm light. He looked down at the man that didn't even come up to his knees. Hi? Isert bowed. He was the chief bard of Yubden, the king of the wee folk of Phelan, though they weren't 100% of the name, they were still workshopping it, so don't hold them to it. I will definitely remember you saying that and respect it in the future, Fergus, one of the kings of Ulster, said. The crowd of human people was growing behind him, and faces were peeking over his shoulder and around his robes at the strange little man. Fergus asked how he could help. Isert described a dinner, a grand banquet of his people in the halls of King Yubden, of the wee folk of Phelan, Fergus smiled. Once again, we're not 100% on that particular name, we're still... Please don't get too attached, the poet said. Anyway, Isert recounted a conversation that the king of the wee folk of Phelan had with the subjects. They began talking at dinner. The king was seated next to his wife, Queen Bebo. Hilariously adorable name, Fergus noted. Then there was Tiny of Tot, the king's nephew and heir apparent. Even better than Bebo, Fergus nodded. There was the very on-brand Glower, the king's strongman who, with an axe, could hew a thistle with one strike. Is that impressive? Fergus asked. It's more of an accuracy thing than a power thing, the bard explained. Anyway, Glower on the door and lords and harpers around the table, they started laughing and talking and drinking, and then conversation kicked off about the human kingdoms. Come now, have you ever seen a king more glorious and powerful than I? King Yubden rose, his golden royal goblet in hand, inlaid with jewels and gemstones. Never, O king, and my nearly 18-inch tall giant over there, Glower. The wine sloshed in the goblet. So fierce and mighty were their warriors and steeds and men-at-arms that no one will be able to assail the kingdom of Phelan and carry them away as hostages. The room, again, went up. At this one, though, Iser, the bard, cleared his throat. That wasn't true. The room stopped and looked at him. They said, excuse me? He said it wasn't true. Sorry, in Arryn, there was this kingdom, Ulster. One of their guys could probably take, I don't know, all the wee folk of Phelan. The bard said he was sorry, but had they ever heard of the Toyn of Cú Chulainn? He could literally hulk out. The bard was as rah-rah nationalistic as any of them, but Ulster could annihilate their kingdom without breaking a sweat, and it wouldn't even be close. So that's how the leprechaun bard ended up in chains. Why did you say that? King Fergus said, now in his own hall where he fed the bard. I mean, I don't disagree, but it was very clearly a time when people were just, I don't know, saying stuff. It was obviously not a serious debate. But there's a virtue when it comes to standing for truth, Isert said. I think you just kind of wanted to be right, though, Fergus bobbed his head. Isert admitted that yes, he did just want to be right. How did that work out for you, being right? Fergus had to know. Isert told how he had been arrested and given 3 days to prove his point, to present a clear token that he had uttered the truth. Also, he was ready to get out. Fergus stretched out and pinched the back of Isert's coat, pulling him dripping from the tankard of ale, the one that he had been swimming around in, drinking from, and setting him down on a satin napkin. To demonstrate his power, Fergus gave the leprechaun a lot of stuff, nice stuff, the finest weapons and armor. Despite saying that every leprechaun house had an abundance of this stuff, Isert still agreed to take it and headed back. But there was someone who wanted to go with him. Ada, a dwarf in King Fergus's court, wanted to visit Phelan. Isert agreed, and the pair made for the coast. I never thought I'd ride side by side to Phelan with a dwarf, Isert said. What about side by side with a friend? Ada smirked. There was a bit of silence, and then Isert said, and no offense, but he barely knew Ada. They were acquaintances at best. He was just remarking that this was an unexpected thing. He didn't even realize Irish mythology had dwarves. Sorry, Ada apologized for making that weird. He thought they were doing a Lord of the Rings thing. They should just go. Both of them jumped atop a horse that could run on water, and Ada was a little unsure, but Isert laughed. No worries. Quote, the weight of wisdom that is in thee will not bear him down. Which, if you're wondering, is the stealthiest, most vicious old-timey burn. Ada seemed to be loving this. When the first leprechauns broke and ran because of the giant that Isert had brought, he knew that this was the best vacation ever. Ubden was eating some crow. Magic or no, it would be pretty challenging to learn that there are giants that can crush us with a step. And even worse to know that Ubden started something, because Fergus wouldn't let this insult go unanswered. Yes, to make things right, Ubden had to travel to Ireland himself and eat porridge. What? Ubden asked. Isert said it was actually exactly as it sounded. There was some porridge simmering in a kitchen in the Kingdom of Ulster. If Ubden went and ate said porridge, all of this would be settled. Ubden said, was that it? Isert nodded, that was it. Ubden said it didn't seem so bad. Okay. Did it have to be a whole thing, or could he just go in the dead of night? Dead of night works. Dead of Night is good, Lysert smirked. Upton said, okay, all right, they would leave immediately. He and Bebo, his wife, leapt atop the horse that can run on water, and in a couple of hours, they were in Ulster. Not long after, they had slipped past the guards and made it to the kitchen. There, true to Isert's word, a pot of porridge simmered on the hob. Since they could not reach it without burning themselves, remember, leprechauns, it's like if we went to Giant Land, they rode their horse up to the edge, and Upton strained, grasping. One taste, that was all it took. But he couldn't reach. He stretched farther and farther until he stretched too far and dropped. And magic porridge. Presumably. It could have also just been very sticky, very overcooked porridge. Really, anyone's guess. Upton thrashed against the gummy oats. No. He looked up to his wife, on the horse, panic in his eyes. Fly, you fool. She cried out that she would never leave him. Also, it's too many Lord of the Rings quotes. He's gonna get angry emails about anachronisms. He said, didn't she see? They both didn't need to be trapped. And the longer she stayed, the more she risked her own life. Also, addressing the anachronisms just compounded the anachronisms. Upton despaired as he saw an arm come from the darkness and a hand close around his wife and queen, Bebo. Another servant came with a ladle, scooping the king from the porridge and dropping him in a bowl. Wordlessly, the servants brought both of them to King Fergus. The old porridge trap, Fergus laughed. What do they think would happen? You ever try to scrub porridge remnants from a pot? It's impossible. This was the oldest trick in the book. Luckily, this was the 6th century, and bound books were still a relatively new thing in Western Europe. What do you want? Upton hissed. Fergus said that he wanted Upton to admit that the Irish humans were better than the wee folk of Faelin. Well, obviously, the leprechaun king said. He was stuck in a bowl of porridge. Things were not going well. Also, ransom, Fergus added. He had no doubt Upton's people would be by to seek his release when he didn't return home. When they did, Fergus just wanted a magical item. Fergus instructed his men, find some tiny handcuffs. Bend a paperclip or something, I don't know. But Upton was incensed to be so dishonored. Handcuffs. He was king of the leprechauns. His word was law. He wouldn't attempt an escape, but he and his wife must be given adequate accommodations. Fergus nodded. Fair enough. Find them a dollhouse or something to stay in until their people attempt a rescue. We'll see the lengths the leprechauns will go to save their king, but that will, once again, be right after this. It was a dream house, actually. It had a pool, a slide that went from floor to floor, and 70-plus accessories. Their stay was fairly comfortable. And while Upton didn't try to escape, they did try other ways to influence their captors into letting them go. Like Bebo, trying to seduce Fergus by putting on really nice shoes and making kissy faces, which I don't even really want to think about that. But thankfully, Fergus saw through the clumsy attempt at coercion. He wouldn't have to put up with it for long, though. The wee folk of Faelin brought 7 battalions to camp in the field before the castle. Now, to me, this seems like the situation for an elite team of leprechaun shock troops to come in and rescue the king, not a time for a pitched battle. I think they really didn't know that they were the small ones in the situation, but once they realized it, they started talking. Their offer? Free corn. In front of Fergus's castle, every year without plowing or planting, the field would spring to life with corn. Corn, if you didn't know, was a word meaning the main cereal plant for its particular region. So, since this is Ireland, it would likely be oats, as opposed to maize in North America. Not sure if there's still that linguistic difference, but anytime you see a medieval or early modern European writer talking about corn, they were probably not talking about the yellow stuff we pop. Anyway, seeing as farming existed, it was no dice from Fergus. he would not go for that. So, of course, the leprechauns sucked all the milk from all the cows in Ireland until they were dry. Still, Fergus would not be moved. So, the following night, they defiled all the wells in Ireland. I can't find any info on how exactly people defiled wells. Sounds dirty, and probably by definition is dirty, and also probably exactly what it sounds like. Fergus, with his reserves of unslurped milk and pristine well water, still refused the bargains of the wee folk of Phelan. After they burned the shaft in every mill in Ulster and snipped off the head of every oat plant, Fergus, well, still wasn't ready to come to the table without a better offer. When they threatened to shave the heads of every person in Ireland, though, Fergus finally sighed. That was enough. If they did that, he would kill their king. Be serious here. The leprechauns agreed and said that the next day they would meet Fergus on the plain, and if he brought the king, they would bring the magical items on offer. Back on the beach, Fergus shook his head. Druidic weapons, love charms, instruments that would play without being touched, a vat of ale that would never go empty. But he didn't get any of that, did he? No, they fled the moment he let go of their king. And now what? They were trying to drown him? Obviously, the leprechaun in his right hand croaked before Fergus tightened his grip. Fergus said that they needed to make good on their promise. He wanted his magic item. He wanted water-breathing shoes.
The leprechauns looked at each other. That was fast, but okay. Any particular reason for the water-breathing shoes?
Fergus barked that it was getting a wish, not getting a wish and getting judged for his choices. He loved swimming. He loved aquatic creatures. He did not love drowning. He knew they existed, too, the water-breathing shoes, because that's what Queen Oobly Doobly was wearing.
Queen Bebo, the leprechauns corrected with a scowl.
That's not better, Fergus scowled right back. Regardless, the leprechauns agreed, and moments later, one returned with the shoes. When Fergus had the shoes in his hands, the formerly captured leprechaun rubbed his throat. He was free. The shoes, some say herbs, Fergus put in his ears, others say cloak he wore wrapped around his head, should work everywhere, except Loch Rudridge.
Why not there? Fergus said, putting the shoes on when they grew to fit his feet.
Safety precautions, the leprechauns replied. The Murdress lives there.
Oh, Fergus said, but they work everywhere else?
Everywhere else. Every ocean, river, lake, fjord, Fergus kept listing things.
Everywhere. Everywhere except Loch Rudridge.
The leprechaun assassins called up their horse that ran on water to take them back to Phelan. Fergus laughed. Well, why would he ever want to go to Loch Rudridge? He had literally the entire world to explore. What would be the draw of a single place he could not go?
Well, you're human, so good luck,
the leprechauns replied.
Won't need it. Won't go there.
So long, you little murder monsters, Fergus said. And his business concluded with the leprechauns. They leapt atop their horse and made for home, while he slipped on his new shoes and went for a walk in the lake. So then I says to them, I says, Loch Rudridge, why would I want to explore Loch Rudridge? I have the entire world to explore, Fergus laughed.
I also wonder why you would want to, Muna said, as the chariot slowed to a stop.
And also, why they had just arrived at Loch Rudridge.
Is that where we are? Fergus laughed. Wow, huh. So interesting. Cool.
You know what?
You're going to take a look under the lake and see why even the leprechauns won't allow their own to approach, Muna sighed.
Just a quick peek, Fergus held up his hands with a little bit gesture. Fergus waded in, dipped his head under, Muna heard a muffled scream, and Fergus rose.
All in all?
Not that bad, Fergus laughed, then looked to Muna. Why was Muna cowering and shuddering like that? Muna shook his head. No reason. There was a reason, though. A very old version tells us that his mouth had been wrenched back as far as his occiput, which could mean his occipital bone, which is the bone at the back base of your skull. So not sure exactly where his mouth stretched, but we do know that it looked absolutely horrifying to Muna, who told his king that they should get home and sleep it off. Sleep what off? Fergus asked. Really? Muna replied. Well, whatever, let's go home. Why does the king's face look like that? One noble said to Muna. Face? What face are you talking about? Another elbowed in. Fergus was two eyeballs, a brain, and a tongue at this point. Okay, I thought it would go back to normal. Muna dropped his forehead into his hands. Well, it's not, the noble said. And this was just after Fergus won the undisputed throne. Okay, they had to contain this thing. They thought about it, and they laid some ground rules. Okay, he would only see people who were prepped and ready for it. There would be an orientation where the new people would prep themselves with as much of a look on Fergus as they could handle while he slept, sort of inoculating themselves against the shock. No one would come into the king's presence if they hadn't previously seen him. He didn't see a person on the palace grounds, in the town, or on his rides that hadn't seen him first. It would be the best-kept secret in all of Ireland, even from Fergus himself. And they would have gotten away with it, too. If Fergus hadn't turned into a massive jerk. Not sure if it would have happened normally, or if being surrounded by people specifically selected to handle him so he never figures out the truth about what happened to his face made it so no one ever challenged him on anything. Regardless, when you're whipping your servants because they aren't washing your head fast enough, when they're the only people your handlers could get to wash your head, there's not really any justification for that. He thought his bather was being slow, so he brought out the whip, I guess he had for that occasion, and hit her with it. Recoiling and gripping her face, she laughed. He could whip her all he wanted, but thankfully, she would never look like him. He reeled. What did she mean? On some level, he had to have known. I think he was in denial. But one look, when the woman held up a bowl of water to his head with a sneer, and Fergus couldn't avoid it anymore. Where is he? Muna ran toward the king's quarters. Fergus never came to the meeting after his weekly head bath. The gathered servants said that the king was gone. Also, he cut his washerwoman in half. Oh, in half? Muna recoiled. How is that even possible? You know what? He didn't even want to know. Search the palace grounds. He couldn't have gotten far. He didn't, or he did. I'm not sure exactly where Loch Rudridge is in relation to Fergus's palace in Ulster. But that was where he ended up. Muna knew as soon as the search was complete, Fergus had returned to the place where it all started. The water was blood red. A lump among the crimson grew until water streamed from the cloak. It was Fergus. He gasped for breath. The blood both was and wasn't his. He had gone back down below to avenge himself, avenge the life he never got to live, because of what this thing did to him when it scared him a lot. He pulled the monster's head from the water. Muna looked down and... Oh. Fergus looked at it. It was scarier looking up at you from the deep. It was all puffed up and toothy. No, I believe you. For sure. Muna definitely did. Fergus collapsed, and Muna caught him, dragging his friend to the shore. Did I do good in the end, Muna? Fergus wounded himself, coughed up blood. I mean, yes, you got the monster, but that was after you ignored the leprechauns and went in the lake anyway. Also, you killed your washerwoman for laughing at you, which, while technically legal, was definitely not okay. I done good, Fergus said. Yeah, sure, Muna replied. And so Fergus, King of Ulster, died. Of him was sung, King Fergus, son of Leet, went on the sandbank of Rudridge,
A horror which appeared to him fierce was the conflict, was the cause of his disfigurement. A lot of lessons here, chief of which is probably if leprechauns build a safeguard into your shoes, there's a reason. Listen to them and do not go into the lake with the eldritch horror. So there you have it, the first story of leprechauns from Irish folklore. And they're leprechauns, definitely not the wee folk of Phelan. Next week is a rare week off for us. There will not be a regular episode. But if you're looking for something in the meantime, we have over 90 member episodes on the member feed, as well as all these ad-free. You can find that at mythpodcast.com/membership or by finding us in Apple Podcasts. The creature this time is the Ullerowic from Quebec in Canada. The Ullerowic is the dragon of 17th century Canada. I've actually had a good number of people reach out over the years about dragons in Canada, and it's always surprising to me that there are so many dragon cryptids in Canada and relatively few down here in the US. I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm grateful. If there was a dragon living behind a waterfall nearby, breathing fire and eating people, that's not really something to be envious of. Since Canada, well, no offense, is not known for its knights, they had a problem. Luckily, there was a Jesuit priest traveling around the area, who apparently thought since exorcisms and evictions were close enough to each other in the dictionary, he had a shot at getting rid of the dragon. And he did. He went to the waterfall, did all his rites and chanting and prayers, and the dragon emerged as if under his command. The beast lumbered through town and then out into the wilderness to a lake that was about as close to the town as a waterfall was. I don't know why. Feels like a bit of a bait and switch, and there's no word on what happened to the town, the priest, or the dragon, so here's hoping it worked out for everybody. Well, everybody except for the dragon. My take, the dragon ate the town after the town chased off the priest for, yes, exorcising the dragon, but only the equivalent of a city block in the other direction. That's it for this time. Myths and Legends is by Jason and Carissa Weiser. Our theme song is by Broke for Free. And the Creature of the Week music is by Steve Combs. There are links to even more of the music we used in the show notes. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you next time.